to bring Christian greetings, County D. Privilege to have been here again this morning. Blessed, it's blessed from the very beginning. Some of those couple of those songs we sang, a couple of phrases. The title, the one, "Would Men Know You've Been with Jesus?" You know that taken from the verse there in Acts 4, verse 13, and the people making note that these men were different. There was something different. These men had spent time with Christ. What a mighty God we serve. We've heard from the devotion all the way through. It's just been a blessing, the beautiful day. If we went out this morning and the sun was just coming up, it was just beautiful out there. It was such a blessing. I'd like for turn your attention to look with me for a opening passage here in Numbers chapter 13. We're going to be looking at a few more giant stories, or another giant story, I guess you'd say. I've titled the message this morning, "He Wholly Followed the Lord." And as I'd like to start out with this passage, and then we'll go on into Joshua later on. Numbers chapter 13, verse 1. We're going to read down through verse 8 and then drop on down to verse 16. "And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Send thou men, that they may search the land of Canaan, which I gave unto the children of Israel. Of every tribe of their fathers shall ye send a man, every one a ruler among them. And Moses, by the commandment of the Lord, sent them from the wilderness of Paran. All those men were heads of the children of Israel. And these were their names: of the tribe of Reuben, Shammah, the son of Zachar; of the tribe of Simeon, Shaphat, the son of Hori; of the tribe of Judah, Caleb, the son of Jephunneh; of the tribe of Issachar, Igal, the son of Joseph; of the tribe of Ephraim, Oshea, the son of Nun." Verse 16. "These are the names of the men which Moses sent to spy out the land. And Moses called Oshea, the son of Nun, Jehoshea. And Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan, and said unto them, Get you up this way southward, and go up into the mountain, and see the land what it is, and the people that dwelleth therein, whether they be strong or weak, few or many, and what the land is that they dwell in, whether it be good or bad, and what cities they be that they dwell in, whether in tents or in strongholds, and what the land is, whether it be fat or lean, whether there be wood therein or not. Be ye of good courage, and bring of the fruit of the land. Now the time was of the first ripe grapes. So they went up and searched the land from the wilderness of Zin unto Rehob, as the men of Hamath. And they ascended by the south and came unto Hebron, where Ahiman, Shishai, and Talmai, the children of Anak, were. Now Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. And they came unto the brook of Eshcol, and cut down from thence a branch with one cluster of grapes, and they bare it between two upon a staff. And they brought of the pomegranates and of the figs. The place was called the brook Eshcol, because of the cluster of grapes which the children of Israel cut down from thence. And they returning from searching of the land, and they returned from searching of the land after 40 days. And they went and came to Moses and Aaron, and to all the congregation of the children of Israel, and to the children of Paran, to Kadesh, and brought back word unto them and unto all the congregation, and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him and said, We came unto the land whither thou sendest us, and it surely it floweth with milk and honey. And this is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the south of the land, and the Hittites, and the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the mountains. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea, and by the coast of Jordan. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses, and said, Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. But the men that went up with him said, We be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they brought an evil report of the land which they had searched, and to the children of Israel, saying, The land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof, And all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which came of the giants. And we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so were we in their sight. And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron. And the whole congregation said unto them, Would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God that we had died in this wilderness? And wherefore hath the Lord God brought us up into this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should be prey? Were it not better for us to return into Egypt? And they said one to another, Let us make a captain, and let us return into Egypt. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. And Joshua the son of Nun, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of them that searched the land, rent their clothes. And they spake unto all the company of the children of Israel, saying, The land which we pass through to search it, it is an exceeding good land. If the Lord delight in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it us, a land which floweth with milk and honey. Only rebel not ye against the Lord, neither fear ye the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Fear them not. But all the congregation bade stone them with stones, and the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of the congregation before all the children of Israel. And the Lord said unto Moses, How long will this people provoke me? And how long will it be ere they believe me for all the signs which I have showed among them? Let's stop there. When you think of Joshua and Caleb, what words that they said or were said about them come to your mind? Any of you front benches, what do you think of when you think of Joshua or Caleb? What words come to your mind? Anybody? Okay, courageous. Okay, God's promise to them. What are the famous words of Joshua that come to your mind? Okay, thank you. And what about Caleb? Okay. Yeah, two men that are remembered. You know, we have the names of the other 10, but we don't hear much about them. But those two are remembered. They're talked about today. You know, God told Moses to send men into Canaan to spy out the land. He sent one for each tribe, and he said he sent rulers. He didn't send them. He wanted a report. He wanted to know what was going on, what kind of inhabitants, what kind of cities there were, how they lived, their fortifications. You know, I don't think they were sent in to make a call whether they had the military capabilities to overtake these cities. But I think they were sent in as maybe a test to see where their faith was, to see where the people's trust was. You know, after this travel, after leaving Egypt and everything they'd been through, you know, was their trust in God? Where had they come? You know, there's defining moments like that come into our lives. Tests come unexpectedly. You know, February 14th, just a few days, a week ago or a little over, in Parkland, Florida High School, now, there was a defining moment in a deputy's life. He was trained, he was hired to keep order and to protect that school by using force if needed. But you know, when the ultimate test came, he failed. And whatever his reasons were, I don't know. Why he didn't step in and try to protect those unarmed students and teachers. I haven't heard that he gave a reason. But, you know, he was there to intervene on behalf of these youth, these teachers, to protect. And one thing I had to wonder was, did this man have children? Did he have grandchildren in this school? If he would have, would have that changed that his reaction in that defining moment? It was definitely a very stressful time. I'm not here to judge. I'm just giving the perspective the way it looks. But you know, my understanding is that there were teachers, there were young men, some of the ages of these on the second bench, 15-year-olds, that actually stood up and stepped in to shield and to try to protect, to keep the door shut, to keep the shooter from entering. You know, there's one that did that. He took 5 bullets to his body, and miraculously he survived. It looks like he will survive. Why did he hold the door? What made him jump up to that door and hold the door shut? Do you think his father had told him, had taught him, in the event this happens, in the event that there's somebody coming in to harm, and it's in your power, you shut the door and you hold it shut? I don't think so. But there was things that had happened before, I believe, in this young man's life. And I don't know anything about him. But there was something that made him, when that defining moment came in his life, that he stepped up to the plate, that he grabbed a hold of the door and pushed it shut and held it shut, even with the bullets riddling through it. And when those spies came back with that incredible fruit, that glowing report of the land, of this land that flows with milk and honey, you can imagine as everybody was listening to this report, I don't know what their expressions were. I'm afraid they weren't as good as they should have been because of where they went after that. When they got to the end of that, they said, "Nevertheless, this is all great. It's a great land. It's there's all kinds of fruit and it just abounds with produce and good things." But you know, I can imagine. You know, tried to imagine what those 40 days, those 12 men spent together, what their conversations were like as they camped out in the hills. I'm sure they were kind of sneaking along, camping, roughing it, going from place to place and looking and seeing the cities, the people, the landscape, and coming from where they were used to out there in the wilderness. And you just imagine how beautiful it was. And I would want to think that Joshua and Caleb were trying to encourage the others. You know, this is, God has given this to us. We're promised. This is promised to us. And maybe some days they succeeded in strengthening a couple of the others' faith in God. And maybe there was days that they were all together. But then they saw another walled city. Or maybe they saw some more of these 10-foot giants walking, strolling around with their big, tossing their big spears around or throwing them, and they just, their hearts shrank. Well, Caleb seems like he was a spokesman when he got a chance to speak. You know, he broke in there and he said, "Let us go up at once to possess it, for we are well able to overcome it." But the men that went up with him said, "We be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we." Humanly speaking, those 10 spies were right. They were telling the truth. They had great giants and a little God. Caleb and Joshua had a great God and little giants. The 10 were problem conscious. The 2 were God conscious. That was the difference. Were those 10 that returned negative just the wrong men? Did Moses make a big mistake in his choices? You know, if there had been 5 more that stood with Joshua and Caleb that day, maybe the reaction would have been different. You know, in Pilgrim's Progress, when Christian reached the top of that hill of difficulty, he met 2 men running, it says in there, amain, or would have been running at full tilt back towards him at a tremendous rate of speed. Their names were Timorous and Mistrust. And Christian asked him, he said, "Sirs, what's the matter? You run the wrong way." And Timorous answered and said, "We were going to the city of Zion, but the further we go, the more danger we face. Wherefore we turn and we're going back." And Mistrust told him, he said, "Just ahead of you lies a couple lions in the way." He said, "Whether they're asleep or awake, we don't know. But we couldn't think that if we came within reach, they would tear us to pieces." And Christian wisely replied, he said, "You make me afraid. But whither shall I fly to be safe?" He said, "If I go back to my own country, that's prepared for fire and brimstone, I shall certainly perish there. If I can get to the celestial city, I'm sure to be safety there. I must venture. To go back is nothing but death. To go forward is fear and of death and life everlasting beyond it. I will yet go forward." You know, there are many giants, like we heard this morning, in the path, on that way to that celestial city, to that promised land. You know, are we willing? Are you willing to say with Joshua and Caleb, "With God's help, we will move on"? To say like Christian said, to go back is absolute loss. It's to lose everything. But to go forward and face the lions, we may lose our lives, but we have everything to gain. You know, we have the giants of fear, of pride. We have those giants as idols that we heard about last Sunday. You know, they're real, the giants of covetousness and doubt, bitterness and anger. You know, we can't make it to Canaan without facing them. But if we focus on our great God and not on the giants, the size of the giants, we have the promise of a safe journey across on in this journey across the water with the man that even the winds and the waves obey his command. You know, we have that story. We'll look at that a little bit later. But he had seasoned sailors saying, "What manner of man is this?" You know, the disciples forgot so quickly the miracles that Jesus had done. You know, the fear gripped their hearts. The storm, they were going to die. They were fearful. You know, the children of Israel seemed to forget so quickly the miraculous delivery from Egypt. All those plagues that came on the children, on the people of Pharaoh and his people there, and their protection, the sea that divided and gave them safe passage, and then turned around and turned its fury of its power on the fast approaching enemy, totally destroyed them. They forgot the cloud that guided them by day, and the pillar of fire that protected them by night. They forgot the manna that came every day, the water from the rock, you know, the shoes and the clothes that lasted them on their journey. You know, on top of it all, they threatened to stone these faithful men for even suggesting that they could reclaim the promised land. Let's jump ahead 40 years. Joshua chapter 14. I'd like to read a few verses there. Starting at verse 6. Joshua 14, verse 6. "Then the children of Judah came unto Joshua in Gilgal, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, said unto him, 'Thou knowest the thing that the Lord said unto Moses, the man of God, concerning me and thee in Kadesh Barnea. 40 years old was I when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land. And I brought him word again as it was in mine heart. Nevertheless, my brethren that went up with me made the heart of the people melt. But I wholly followed the Lord my God. And Moses sware on that day, saying, Surely the land whereon thy feet have trodden shall be thine inheritance, and thy children's forever, because thou hast wholly followed the Lord my God. And now, behold, the Lord hath kept me alive, as he said, these 45 years, even since the Lord spake this word unto Moses, while the children of Israel wandered in the wilderness. And now, lo, I am this day 85 years old, and yet am I as strong this day as I was in the day that Moses sent me. As my strength was then, even so is my strength now, for war both to go out and to come in. Now therefore, give me this mountain, whereof the Lord spake in that day, for thou heardest in that day how the Anakims were there, and that the cities were great and fenced. If so be the Lord will be with me, then I shall be able to drive them out, as the Lord said. And Joshua blessed him and gave unto Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, Hebron for an inheritance. Hebron therefore became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, unto this day, because that he wholly followed the Lord God of Israel. You know, we just read about a battle there that would be interesting to know some details. You know, just how did the Lord defeat this impenetrable looking city full of giants? But Caleb's focus was on his great God, not and on those promises, not on the big giants. You know, he had a great God and small giants. You know, what a blessing to see his faithfulness. 45 years later, his strength was still the same physically. But, you know, I believe the most important thing was his faith in the living God. He recalled that day that him and Joshua had stood up and spoke out, encouraging the children of Israel to go on and to conquer the land. But, you know, because of the people's unbelief, he and his family also had to endure and suffer those 40 long years, 40 years full of tragedy, death, and sadness. And now he says, therefore, give me this mountain. You know, at his age, the fervor wasn't gone. All those wasted years, he could have been discouraged, but he wasn't. He said it didn't change his love for God. When the hour came, he was still ready. You know, if you are committed, wholly following the Lord, Moses said that about Caleb. That was Caleb's motto about himself. And maybe we'd question that. Maybe we'd have a difficult saying that. But, you know, the most important thing is God said that about him. He said that about Caleb. It's in Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 34. It says, and the Lord heard the voice of your words and was wroth and sware, saying, surely there shall not one of these men of this evil generation see that good land which I swear to give unto your fathers, save Caleb, the son of Jephunneh. He shall see it, and to him will I give the land that he hath trodden upon, and to his children, because he hath wholly followed the Lord. You know, what was different about Caleb and Joshua? Didn't they face the same fears and struggles that the other spies did? Were they walking on a different side of the ridge? Did they see something different than the others did? What made them come back with a different report? Were they, you know, I believe their focus was different. They were looking through a different set of lenses. Their God was able. They trusted in their God. They had anchor points. They were looking back. They had a vital connection with their God. You know, they were looking through lenses that had God filters in them. You know, we don't have the promise of a journey across the sea with no storms. The disciples literally had Jesus in the boat with them. You know, they faced a storm that made them fear for their lives. I'm just going to read that passage out of Mark chapter 4, verse 35. It says, in the same day when the even was come, he saith unto them, let us pass over unto the other side. And when they sent away the multitude, they took him, even as he was in the ship. And there were also with him other little ships. And there arose a great storm of wind, and the waves beat into the ship, so that it was now full. And he was in the hinder part of the ship, asleep on a pillow. And they awake him, and say unto him, Master, carest thou not that we perish? And he arose, and rebuked the wind, and said unto the sea, peace, be still. And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. And he said unto them, why are ye so fearful? How is it that ye have no faith? And they feared exceedingly, and said one to another, what manner of man is this, that even the wind and the sea obey him? You know, they had an invitation there. It says, let us pass over unto the other side. Jesus gave them that invitation. You know, that invitation, I believe, is there for every child of his today to go with him on a journey to the other side. That is life. It was an invitation that was loaded with promises. They were promised his fellowship on the journey. I believe they were looking forward to it after that hard day, long day. They got to be with Jesus by themselves. They had the promise of his fellowship on the other side. They were looking forward to that. They had the promise of a safe passage to the other side. You know, I believe we can compare that to life. He's invited us to go with him to the other side, to the promised land, if you might say. He's promised us a safe journey there. He's promised to be with us. He's promised that we can be with him over there. You know, he hasn't promised that there will be no storms, but he's promised that if there are storms, he will be with us through those storms. You know, if we can focus on the one that the disciples had to say, you know, what manner of man is this that even the winds and the waves obey him? And what a difference it'll make if we look through those lenses. You know, how old do you have to be to wholly follow the Lord? I appreciated what Brother Joseph shared there this morning. You know, David used the tools that he had. Whatever age you find yourself at here, you have tools to use. You have things that God gives you. And you know, you may not, they may be different. Those may change as we go through life. But he gives you the tools that you need to stand up for the task. You know, those young men that were stood up to the task, that were willing to sacrifice their lives for their classmates. You know, there was one that survived, but there were several that didn't. They have honorable medals, but they didn't. They're not here to see them. And I hope their lives were right and they were ready to go. That I don't know. But they may not have even thought about what they were doing. I really doubt it. I think it probably happened so fast, and it was just instant. It's what came, and that happens in a relationship with, when we have a relationship with Christ. That happens when we're following, when we're doing what we know. That's what prepares us when those defining moments come. You know, if you're wholly following the Lord when the storm hits, if you are invested, you can look back to those times when God was there. You can look back to those times when you found peace with God, when you gave your life to him, and you could go to bed at night and relax. You didn't care if Jesus comes tonight. It doesn't matter. I'm ready to go. You know, those are the things that those are the anchors and the things that we can look back to. You know, God has a work for everyone to do, a place for you to fill. He's looking for boys, for girls, for men and women that are willing to say, here am I, send me. Men that are, that can say that others around them know that they are wholly following the Lord. You know, we can criticize the armed man that took a position in a safe place while the shooter was mowing down helpless victims. You know, the danger was real. He would have been taking a real risk. His weapon wasn't a match for the one that the shooter had. But, you know, he wasn't invested. He was there. That was what he was being paid to do. But where is your investment this morning? Who has your heart? You know, are you looking through eternal lenses where we see a great God and small giants? Or do you see great giants and a small God? You know, are you problem conscious or are you God conscious? I'd like to read just a couple of verses here in closing out of Revelation chapter 2. Talking to the church of Ephesus. And just as we read that, listen to the words and you know, where do we find ourselves? Unto the angel of the church of Ephesus write, These things saith he that holdeth the seven stars in his right hand, who walketh in the midst of the seven golden candlesticks. I know thy works, and thy labor, and thy patience, how thou canst not bear them which are evil, and thou hast tried them which say they are apostles, and not, and are not, and hast found them liars, and hast borne, and hast patience, and for my name's sake hast labored, and hast not fainted. Nevertheless, I have somewhat against thee, because thou hast left thy first love. Remember therefore from whence thou art fallen, and repent, and do the first works, or else I will come unto thee quickly, and will remove thy candlestick out of his place, except thou repent. But this thou hast, that thou hatest the deeds of the Nicolaitans, which I also hate. He that hath an ear to hear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches. To him that overcometh will I give to eat of the tree of life, which is in the midst of the paradise of God. And what a beautiful promise. And I think that the challenge for us there is what he was speaking to the church there at Ephesus. He said, I have somewhat against thee because thou hast left thy first love. And, you know, I think it's so easy to, as we go through life and as we face the giants of life, to lose that, to start focusing on the giants instead of focusing on God, instead of focusing on what he has done for us and the promise that we have there in the end. He said, to him that overcometh will I give to eat of the tree of life, which is in the midst of the paradise of God. Let's come before the Lord in prayer.